I'm Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. You can find the books, people, recipes, restaurants, value wines, and easy cocktails we feature online anytime at WNPR.org. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show. There's no getting away from it. The issue of control, it is personal and it's political. We try to teach children to control themselves, to function in a civil society. But it doesn't end there, of course. We all want to control and have felt the boot on the neck, too much control. There's so much here to talk about. And later in the show, Dr. Nancy Horn and I would like you to join the conversation. We are monitored in every aspect of our lives by the government. We now know that. How much control is enough to keep us safe? Is that the real reason for the snooping? What does it feel like in good ways and in bad ways to give up control by choice? And how suffocating is it to face a controlling person, especially one who isn't aware of how controlling he or she can be? Dr. Nancy Horn is a psychologist who sees individuals and couples in New Haven. She's been on the show for decades, lucky us. Nancy, in the pantheon of psychological issues in our lives, how big is control?
Oh, Faith, I think it's enormous, as you're suggesting. In my practice, I see people who are upset with feeling too controlled. They're controlled by other people. Some people need to have more choice. They need to have control over their lives so they can be happy. Depression is my favorite. I made up an equation for depression. Give someone a situation that they don't like, that they're unhappy in, that's really not okay, and then you make them think that they have no way of changing that. And that usually results in somebody getting depressed.
So that sense of being unable to have any control over anything is itself depressing.
Yes. Well, it's depressing, especially if there's something that you don't like, can't tolerate, that's a real negative in your life.
What about this idea of couples? That couples go through stages. There's the stage where you first meet,
right?
And what's that stage about?
Well, when people first meet, the issue at hand is inclusion exclusion. Am I in this couple or not in this couple? Am I liked? Am I not liked? Once that gets settled and we've decided that we're going to be in a couple, and this often happens usually when people move in together, suddenly now the control issue becomes sort of the paramount thing. Am I going to get to hang my pictures in the room? Am I going to have to, still keep my messy place where I put my clothes? Will I get to go out with my friends enough? So all these control issues. And whether or not I'm going to get my needs met.
And does that stay in the couple for the whole length of a relationship? I mean, are people always in long-term relationships and marriages, are people always battling control? Who's in charge?
Well, usually they get these worked out. I mean, they do get it worked out and they come to some sort of resolution. Now, sometimes people give up control when they probably shouldn't have. So they'll give up control just so there's no conflict, or so they'll, things are much easier to do. And then they can come to regret it later. Think, oh, why did I do that?
Or become angry.
Yeah,
it would
seem
to me.
Sometimes they can become angry. I mean, I gave up control of the social life because the person I was with was very good at doing that. I'm pretty good at doing it too, but he'd say, oh, well, oh, I'll call those people and ask them for dinner. And so I let that happen. But then I realized after quite some time that actually he was having much more contact with the people. So my giving that control up and sort of to expedite things and to make things easier was probably not what I should have done. We should have alternated who was going to call the people.
That's so interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah.
How do you – when someone is identified as controlling, what does that really mean? You know, if someone's labeled as controlling, what do you mean by that?
Well, it usually means the other person thinks it's too much, or at least the outside audience thinks it's too much. I mean, I sit in my practice and I see situations where I'm flabbergasted that people can be as controlling as they are. You know, 80-year-old parents telling their 60-year-old adult children exactly what to do on very basic levels. And these 80-year-olds are not losing it either. These are just – they've just done it their whole lives.
So it's habit.
Yeah. I mean, it's – they take that position. I've seen it with I've really seen it with adolescents. It's amazing. About 18 years ago, I noticed it, and I thought, wow, this is amazing. My son was going out with a girlfriend. He'd gone out with her for a year, and he was in high school. He was a big football player, you know, captain football team. And he broke up with her, and she arranged it so that he could not go out with any other girl in the high school, in that school. She and her friends worked it out where he couldn't go out with any other girl in that school. So he had to meet somebody at the other rival high school and go out with them. Well, this was the beginning of it, and I think it's gotten much more now. There's many adolescents who think they can tell their girlfriend or their boyfriend exactly what they're going to do, who they can talk to. And it's really a problem.
Do you think the desire of some young people – I know there are parents who want to ship their kids off to some kind of boarding school. But when kids choose it and they start appealing to the parents to want to go away to school, do you think that's a way of these young people trying to take back control?
Oh, I don't
have
know.
More
maybe
control?
So. Yeah, maybe so. That's a good point, Faith. I mean, I think that might very well be true. At least sort of get away from their parents a little bit, have a little more freedom.
So what about the kids, you know, the way children feel? I think to myself, they must feel, I mean, everything is new to them. And they must feel so controlled and on the one hand, grateful for it, and on the other hand, driven crazy by it.
Yeah, it's hard because I think there's probably every child thinks, oh, I wish I hadn't been made to do this. I didn't have to do this, or I wish I'd had greater freedom when doing it. I certainly wanted more freedom. When I was 9, I was just praying to be 21 when I would be a free person and decided
that. Why? Why was that?
I think it's because my family was I thought my mother was too oppressed, really. I felt like she was just too oppressed, and I couldn't have that life. So – and when I was 21, I'd get to make my own decisions. I wouldn't have people telling me no, I thought. And if I earned money, I would never have to be in a relationship in which I had to be subservient and stay there. So it was crucial to me to have a career where I make my own money.
So, and has that value about money stayed with you?
Oh, yeah. I would really, I mean, I think that if people have arrangements where one person's not making money and the other person is, and they're loving to each other, it shouldn't be such a problem. It shouldn't be a problem one way or the other. But I always really wanted to be making my own money so that I never felt like I had to stay in a bad situation. So it was crucial to me just in terms of feeling okay and having my control of my own life.
So would you say that growing up a certain way makes a set of people have issues with control? You know, I was thinking if your parent, one of your parents is particularly controlling, do you then rebel about not?
Gosh, you know? Yeah, people really definitely do that. You can see people not want to get bossed around about certain things.
Right, don't boss.
And really have a bad reaction to it. And I'm sure that there's many people that have dealt with feeling like they were being controlled too much and have come up with solutions to how to not be. You know, so.
Like what?
Well, I the example that I gave, I think I've mentioned this, but, you know, of like somebody just putting food on my plate and being able to say, figuring out how to keep this person from continuing to put food on my plate. And it was a real problem I had to solve. And I solved it by putting food on their plate, and then they stopped. So that's a small example.
You mean every time you went to someone's, this person's house,
yeah, this person,
you would get.
The person always sat next to me, and they always gave me like an extra piece of pie and put it on my plate. And I said, oh, no, thanks. I tried all different strategies, and the only one that finally worked was my saying, just say, oh, I want you to have some. Oh, have some more. So I put another piece of pie on his plate.
And right. that stopped him.
Yeah, it stopped it completely. It was great.
There is a language where I heard a man, the reason I asked you that question about if you grew up with a controlling parent, I didn't, you know, his parents are long dead, but I heard him say one day this sentence, I don't like to be, he was getting angry with his spouse, and he said, I don't like to be told what to do. And I was watching this, and I burst out laughing because I thought, we all do that. I mean, everybody tells everybody what to do, you know? So I thought, well, good luck with it, because everyone is, we all make suggestions. Well, how about, why don't you try this, or why don't you do this? There's no escaping it.
Well, some people make a big distinction between somebody saying, go do this, versus I would like you to do this, or versus would you please do this? And they really, it feels really quite different to people. So he may have just been talking about that category of somebody saying, you know, mow the lawn now.
Uh-huh. So the language is, I was going to say, how do you handle being in the presence of someone you feel is controlling you? What are the things you, how do you talk about it? What are the things, you know, and let's say it's justified. So, what are the things you can say?
Well, I would ask them. I mean, it depends how their language is. If it was really annoying to me, I'd probably try and get them to change their language around. And that sometimes
so
makes
I
it
would
feel
like.
Better. Yeah. Well, and then saying I would like, you can confront them and say, look, we have to deal with this in a different way because I'm getting bent out of shape from how you're talking to me.
Okay,
so other suggestions.
So the I would like is a way to request something.
Well, it's a way to be effective with what you need and want in the world. So you can put out there, I would like either you to, you know, change how you're doing this. Or with adolescents, for example, they have a huge problem with being told what to do. So I usually try and get parents to write down what they want the kids to do so the kids can go to this piece of paper, see what the chores are for the day, and they don't have to have these power struggle interactions. It's just right there on paper. And then the kid can get the task done whenever it fits their schedule within a certain time frame. And there's usually a lot less conflict. But if a parent's constantly saying, okay, now you pick up your room, and did you do your math, and are you, and do the, take out the garbage, and move your shirt from over here, it gets very, they feel very bossed around. It becomes a problem.
And so the issue of control comes up. And so if there's a list, it gives the other person a sense of, I'm thinking adults should try this.
Oh, yeah. It's great. It's a lot better. So, because and also it gives the kids some choice. And choice is so important. Again, that's another issue of control. We want to make choices. So if there's five things on the list, they can decide which one they want to do, for example. And if they have a time limit, they can decide, I mean, a time frame, they can decide which thing they want to do. So they get some choice in it. Whereas if they're constantly being told, this minute do that, it's usually not a pleasant situation.
New Haven psychologist Dr. Nancy Horn is here, and we are talking about control. If you have ever felt what I call the boot on the neck, that someone's controlling you, or if you've ever felt or been accused of being controlling. This is a lifelong issue for all of us on this planet, and we're talking about it, and we're going to continue that conversation and take calls from you after a short break. Stick around. Find out what we talk about on the show online anytime at WNPR.org. Click on programs to find the Faith Middleton Show. Dr. Nancy Horn is here, a psychologist who sees individuals and couples in New Haven. And we're talking about the issue of control. That is a phrase that gets thrown around a lot. You know, that this one's a controlling person, that one's a controlling person, he's a controlling boss, she's a controlling boss. So we're talking about what this is and what it feels like to have that sense that somebody's controlling you, or to be accused of being a controlling person. Maybe you do have issues with this. And, you know, where does that come from? How is it, what happens to us growing up? Is it just being in the presence of a parent who's controlling? Nancy, you were saying there's sibling control that is very serious.
Yeah, a lot of times kids, they have sort of a pecking order, but sometimes they can get really out of control. You can have one sibling who rules the roost completely and gets to be the boss of anything when they're around. And it can get really extreme. They can be threatening, and they can be very intimidating, and they can do physical stuff, and it gets into abusive stuff. And it's just, in some ways, it's like a secret. It's almost like a secret
abuse.
Form of control that's going on, because people aren't looking at siblings, because they don't do it in front of their parents. They wait till their parents are gone, and then that's when they do it.
The bossing starts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've seen the children in the house control the entire family.
That's for sure, Faith. More and more. They definitely do. But there you have a situation where parents are letting that happen, either because they don't want to give their kids any kind of pain, they don't want to say no, they don't want to be embarrassed in front of company, or they just they don't know what to do. They don't know how to take charge.
I really have seen the parents make suggestions or say, you know, I think we should do X, Y, and Z. And then the children pronounce that that's not what they're going to do. And they simply, and not in a bratty way necessarily, just a statement, no, that's not what we're going to do. And the parents say, oh, okay. And I think, really? How amazing. And I look at these kids and I think, I see in you that you're going to be probably a great person when you grow up anyway. But this is quite amazing to see that role reversal.
I agree with you, Faith. I think there's many listeners who are very sympathetic to what you're saying right now, where they've seen it happen. And they just find it astounding. And even people who...
They think it's esteem. They're building esteem, though. I think the parents do.
Well, they may be thinking, yeah, they're building self-esteem, but they're also not saying no. They're not causing their kid any pain. And there's some pain. To be socialized usually requires some kind of discomfort, someplace along the way. And you can do it in a much more positive way. You can be guiding about things. But at some point, there's a bottom line of, in this situation, you can't do what you want to do. I mean, I've seen people let their three-year-olds go across the street, you know, because the kid wanted to walk alone. Because, of course, it's normal for a two- or three-year-old to want to be independent and walk alone. But there's a situation where you have to say no, you know. You have to, we got to hold hands. And we can make a game of it, but you got to hold my hand. We go across the street. We can make a game where you're the general and I'm your soldier, but we're still going to hold hands when we go across
the street. Wow. Here we are doing this, and I happen to pick up this Paris Review of just interesting conversations and interviews with people. And this is an old one. And there was an essay with Anthony Burgess in this Paris Review, and he was quoting this poem. And the poem was by this Coventry Patmore. And so Anthony Burgess says this. He says, a widowed father strikes his boy and sends him to bed, and then in remorse the father visits the sleeping child, and this child, his cheeks are still wet from sobbing, and the father weeps himself because the boy has placed his toys on his bedside table in this effort. And he writes, range there with careful art to comfort his sad heart. In other words, to make order out of a life temporarily ruined.
It's poignant.
I almost burst into tears when I read this, because I certainly have seen that moment where a child is the life of the child does feel ruined for him or her at that point. It's sobbing with heartbreak over something and then doing a little thing. And I think how amazing, how resilient for a child to even think to put my little toys in order because I'm so, my world is so out of control.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I mean, I assume he was a grieving child.
Yeah.
At that point, so.
Yeah. So a sense of having control of the world, you know, through these little acts we see, you know, that's the good side of control in children. I was talking about how hard it is for them, I'm sure, to be controlled by adults all the time, you know. And then we talked about the other side where parents have absolutely given up control.
Yes.
But then there's this response, this kind of resilience in people.
Oh, I think kids are just amazing. They're so amazing. And especially in my field, you get to see it because you see kids grow up in terrible situations and they can grow up and be just wonderful, successful people. And they've adapted and they've moved beyond their own situation. It's amazing.
Let's talk about when control is a good thing. We talked about, and I want to get to adolescents too, because they're doing, as you pointed out, lots of things to control each other. So control, you know, here's a child showing resilience. What about, you mentioned that it can happen that people like it in the military.
Oh, yeah. I heard somebody telling me the other day that once you get over that initial getting bossed around part, there's a certain comfort that comes from the structure. There's a real comfort. Even though you hated it initially, you can get so that you really like it. It has a comforting feel.
Well, when you were saying you had a partner at one point, and it was so easy for you because he was handling all your social engagements,
right,
but then had the more intimate contact with people as
a
result.
Exactly.
That's so interesting. I bet everybody can identify with that.
They didn't know I was a person saying, oh, I think we should have these people over for dinner.
Yeah. I was thinking about that 50s school, and, you know, maybe a lot of people still do this, I don't know, that 50s way of being, I describe it, where one person handles the money.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, and sometimes it's because somebody's good at it, just the way your mate was.
Right. And that, absolutely, you can sort of defer to the person who wants to do it or defer to the person who's good at it and then not really know what's going on with the finances at all not making choices about where the money goes and how it's being allocated.
Yeah, money as a control issue. I think that must be big. You must see that.
Yes, I do. I definitely do.
And how does that work? So if somebody has the money, they feel as if they get to make the decisions.
Well, right. They make a lot of decisions. I mean, it can vary. There's really a continuum of it, but they make decisions. I think the biggest thing that happens is the person who's doing the bills, paying the bills, can tend to be the person who seems most worried about money. And then they can get frustrated with the other person because the other person is off saying, oh, gee, I don't know what the problem is. I mean, I don't know. Why can't we do blah, blah, blah? And the solution to it is for everybody to just sit down and pay the bills together. Even if one person is doing all the writing, they both are actually sitting and putting their eyes on the bills and see what's going on.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And then the person who's paying the bills feel like they have a partner in some way with it. And the person who wasn't informed gets to see that actually the money has to go in certain places, and then there's either nothing left over or more. How much is left over, and it works. It works better.
And we see spouses. We see that spouses trying to make up a solution, and that solution ends up being, I'm sneaking bags in the house, you know, purchases, sneaking them in the house.
And sometimes people do that.
As this, I think, how is that going to? I mean, and it works somehow. I mean, somehow people they show up in new clothes.
Well, there's people that don't actually look at bills; they just pay them.
Uh huh.
So that's one thing that can happen is they just pay the bills. They don't really look and see what happened, or they don't check up on the credit card company to see if they did things right. They just pay it.
So what about the way that adolescents, you see this a lot because you work with adolescents in your practice a lot too. How are they dreaming up ways. You used as an example your son breaks yes. up with a young woman in high school, and she and her friends say he's not dating another woman in our school. So what else?
I'm also seeing people actually thinking they can boss each other around. They can boss their boyfriend around, a girlfriend around. I had an example is in California. There was a girl who just became a freshman, very cute, smart girl. And she got rushed by the head basketball player. He was like the top basketball star. And I think he was like a junior. And they were going out, and he told her, she said, "Oh, I'm going to go to my brother's soccer game." And he said, no, you're not. You're going to go to my game. You're going to come to my game." And she said, "Oh, no, I'm going to go to my brother's soccer game. I need to go." And he insisted. And she said, "You know what? I think we need to break up." And I was so proud of her, because that was really in contrast to a lot of what I see, where somebody says, "No, I'm telling you what you're doing. You're going to come to my game." And maybe they're really just trying to say, "I want you to come to my game," but they don't want to act like they have feelings. So they're just sort of cutting orders. But the fact of the matter is, there's a lot of order cutting. And it can go either way. Girls can say that to guys, what they're going to do with their time, and they ask them to wait on them. You know, they expect their girlfriend to wait on them.
That scene you just described, when you talk to experts, as you well know, in the field of battered women, domestic violence, that is usually one of the signs, a super control.
Right.
The man's tendency to be super controlling of the woman and giving directions like that. "You will go here. You won't talk to this one."
That can happen even when somebody's not being physically battered. And you can have physical battering where somebody's not controlling somebody so much too. But there is this whole class of people who think the main thing they try to do is they try not to let their spouse have friends. Not see friends, not have family. They control how much contact they have with the outside world. They don't let them have a job because, again, they will make money. They want to keep them at home and dependent and bossed around.
What about gender? Is there, you know, are there categories of people by gender who tend to control?
I there's plenty of men who feel that they're controlled by women. Now, a lot of times they feel controlled simply because women get upset with them about things. I think the most of the control that I see is with men, and it may have to do with sort of where we live, or I'm not quite sure, but what I'm noticing is that there are men who actually believe that it is their job to control their women. And I find that just astounding, as you can imagine, that they think they're not ashamed of it. They'll act like that in front of anyone. It's their job to control their women. She has to do what they say. They pick what happens. They pick the movie that they're going to go to. If they go to a movie, they are completely in charge, and that is how they do it. And they think they should be doing that.
I heard a man say to his other friend, another man, he was just dating someone new, and he said, he was describing her, and he said, "She's great. If I tell her to sit, she sits. If I tell her to stand, she stands."
Isn't that amazing? It's really amazing. And I think maybe somebody was told that's how you've got to be. You know, you have to be the boss. You have to be the boss in your family. For those of us who have been educated and have our own careers, we don't tolerate that very well. And there's a lot of people that have not had a lot of education that don't tolerate very well. So it really requires somebody who's willing to stay in that relationship and may also think it's okay for them to get bossed around. But it's tough to hear.
We were both before the show started trying to think of novels that would be about this issue of control. And I thought of Fahrenheit 451
right.
as, you know, being a whole controlling society. You know, I mean,
it's like Brave New World, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right now in Homeland, Carrie's in a mental hospital to control her.
In the TV series, right. In Showtime.
Yep.
Yeah.
She's
right, because she's bipolar, right?
And well, that's not why she's got put in. She got put in because she started she got blamed for something, and so she started giving secrets, government secrets to journalists, or tried to, and so they whisked her off to the mental hospital. Than shooting her, however.
But also, at that point, she's also off her meds, and so you're left as a viewer trying to figure out whether she starts doing these diagrams and these little intricate things when she's off her meds, and so you're left, and she's started doing them, so you're left trying to figure out, are they controlling her, or are they trying to protect her because she's off her meds? You know, her immediate boss that she used to trust. As you can see, we're both kind of obsessed with this show. New Haven psychologist Dr. Nancy Horn is here. She's a longtime contributor on the show, and we're talking about the issue we all face, have something to do with control, whether you feel controlled or you're the one doing the controlling. And we ask you this question: have you ever been in a situation where someone was too controlling, and how did you handle it? 203, or you can talk about it from another angle if you want. 203-776-9677. 203-776-WNPR. What else do adolescents do to control other? Well, there's a thing with style, I think, where there's the demand that you have to have an object, the expectation that this is the cool object. And if you don't have this, you better get this object if you're going to be cool. So cool and popular. We control whether you're in or whether you're out.
And there's a whole dress code thing too. What a form of control that is. I mean, and I think people grant that it is to control people, keep people under control, that people are better behaved when they are more formally dressed.
We've just seen John Boehner in the Republican Party, a whole debate over whether, and the language was used over and over again, does he have control of his people?
Right. There you go.
You know, I mean, whether you liked or didn't like what he did, that was it. Did he have control over his people?
Right.
The Democrats have always been charged with being the unruly party. You know, for good and for bad, that nobody has control of anybody. So interesting. All right, here's our number, 203-776-9677. If you have a story about control, we would love to hear from you. 203-776-9677. We'll be right back.
Love written on the hands that hung the stars, hope living in the blood that was spilled for me. Control. It's time to let you go. Control.
You can tweet us at FaithWNPR or join the conversation with us on Facebook. Search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to you for listening and to our talented team, senior producer Lori Mack and producer Jonathan McNichol. New Haven psychologist Dr. Nancy Horn is my guest. We're talking about the issue of control. I want to say, we wondered if folks would call, because like money, this is a scary topic for people, I think. Don't you think, Nancy?
Well, Faith, I told a couple people that they said, what topic are you going to talk about? I said, control. They went, oh. So I guess tough.
What is that? What do you think that gets to?
I don't know. I was a little bit surprised. I think, I think they were worried about people saying, talking about having too much control.
Yeah, I think
everybody's like, oh, gosh.
Haven't we in some point in our lives had that said to us? I certainly have. And when I think about my life and I think of things, you know, where I think, oh, I wish I hadn't done that, it actually is usually, you know, being controlling in a situation.
I felt like you did something too much.
Yeah, I felt like too much. Yeah. So, Kevin Faith Middleton with Dr. Nancy Horn. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you very much, Faith. You're my big one of my. I'm a big fan of your show.
Oh, you're so nice. Thank you.
Dr. Horn, good afternoon.
Hello.
I'm in a same-sex relationship, and I want to know. My partner makes a lot more money than I do. Every month it's a struggle because we're trying to figure out. Well, he's pointing out what bills need to be paid, and also always tells me the amount of the bills and. I try to conserve because he generally pays most of the bills. So my question is how do you handle this situation in a same-sex relationship and move forward without it becoming a monthly nightmare?
Okay,
I'll
Kevin.
Answer off the air.
Okay, Kevin. Let me just before you go, quick question. Why I'm a little bit puzzled, and maybe you're thinking of something I haven't thought of yet, but I just wonder why it would be any different. In a same-sex relationship than in an opposite-sex relationship? Why do you think it's different?
I think it's there's a little bit. We're both type A personalities, so as you all have mentioned before, and Dr. Horn mentioned that, you know, I want to have my own money and I work and that kind of thing, and I try to contribute what I can, but it never seems to be enough.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you said you were going to take the answer up here, and yes, give us the answer. So Nancy, thanks, Kevin. Nancy Horn.
Here's what I suggest: have everybody sit down and write what their values are. What's the most important thing for them to spend money on? For some people, it's savings. For some people, it's paying for the kids' education. So you write down all those values and you try to put them together and respect the importances for people. So saving for one person, you know, okay, my partner, that is what they want the most. So it has to be included. The other suggestion I have is that there be some free money, and that everybody gets to have some free money where they decide how it's going to get spent. I don't know. Doing it together, it should work out. So you're both making decisions together. So those are the only other two suggestions I have.
I was thinking for a second, if people are role identified and you have a male and a female, and you go back to some old school rule about, well, the men handle the money and the women spend the money, you know, then you've got an opposite sex dynamic there. And so if you're in a same sex relationship, well, who is in charge? I suppose you could argue would be confusing. On the other hand, I just don't understand that there's a difference between opposite sex and same sex couples about this. How about in practice? Have you ever seen?
Yeah, I haven't seen any difference between the same sex couples or the opposite sex couples on this. But it is difficult if there's conflict over it. So that's why I suggest going to the values, deciding where the money's going to go really each month. Who gets? Is there a discretionary fund that everybody can make decisions about?
What if you have opposite values about, which of course everybody does?
I think you have to respect both values and accommodate that in the budget.
Uh huh. Okay, Linda Faith Middleton with Dr. Nancy Horn. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I had something of an observation, and I wonder if I'm imagining it. But for me, it seems like every time two people converse, one of them has more control than the other. And I think I became aware of this when I became aware of just a general lack of civility out there. And I was struggling with where that might come from. And
wow, that's so interesting. What an interesting.
I'm waiting for someone to write that book. But, you know, they might mutter, they might interrupt, they might shout you down. There's 100 ways that people take control of a conversation.
Well, you see, asking somebody a question places a demand on the other person. So that is, there's a demand implicit in a question. So to not be controlled, one of the things you can do is to not answer the question, but in fact answer with a question back or to state something about yourself that is not necessarily an answer to the question. So there's various ways to not be controlled in a conversation. Coming from your own self, talking about your own perspective is a way to not feel controlled in a conversation. If you just let some people be the agenda setter, if you will, you can feel like you're being controlled.
Right.
Linda, I appreciate your comment so much because it's an area I hadn't thought about. The muttering, the interrupting, you know, as I'm doing right now.
There's so many ways that I become aware of. I think the worst is when you make a point with someone and their response back is something completely unrelated, as though they never heard what you said.
That's very frustrating.
So that's just another way. But anyway, thank you so much.
You know, Linda, let me one more thing. The nonstop talker, have you ever been in the presence of that person who asks a question of you and just talks and talks and talks? It is a form of control. And the way I deal with it is I just pretend I'm listening to the radio.
Or symphony.
I hope I'm not that person. You know, I fear being that person.
Thank you.
Well, you just divide your air time up. You know, you ask questions. Let the other person talk half the time. You talk the other half the time, and you'll be good.
Yeah.
That's right.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Yeah. We're talking about the issue of control from any angle you like, but if you certainly have felt that you were being controlled or had an experience with it and want to tell a story about that, we'd appreciate it. 203-776-9677. Not trying to control you, just putting the idea out there. I was talking to someone who's a mindfulness-based stress reduction teacher. And so this is a form of meditation. And this person said, you know, when you're meditating, you are the way they teach you to do this is to say you're breathing, and to train yourself to be in the moment. You are watching your thoughts go by, and you're trying not to identify with them. And that training in allowing the feelings and the thoughts to go by is letting go of control. That so often we don't want to feel things. We don't want to see that we think things. And so sitting there quietly and breathing and watching them go by is the training of allowing. And in the end, the allowing of these things to rise up and to experience them is in many ways, this teacher believes, and other teachers believe, is a form of releasing them.
Yes, it's like you get rid of when you have extensive internal control. On the other hand, with mindfulness, you become that awareness allows you to actually be more effective in the world or to have more control over your world. So it's a kind of a mixed thing, but it's
interesting.
Yes, because you can, at the very least, you can articulate where you're coming from. I mean, there's times when people come into therapy because they want to be more effective in their world. And if they know how they're feeling and can put words to it, then they can articulate that better to somebody else.
Just the other night, as we talk about control, I was having a discussion with someone in a new job who said, you know, how to do this, to be in charge of a large number of people. I'm not trained in this, the person said, and I'm going to study up on this. And it caused me to think about how you can control a group of people in a way, as you would put it, Nancy, that's effective for the greatest effectiveness without giving everybody a sense that they're constantly being, that's the word, bossed around.
Yes. Well, the organizational psychology people study this all the time, you know, teaching managers how to be. My favorite way is to talk about what my goals are as a manager, as a leader. This is what I have to do. Could we all get behind that? And are you having any problems getting behind it? And I'm very determined that we're going to reach this goal. I'll help you do it if necessary. You know.
Okay. Rob, Faith Middleton with Dr. Nancy Horan on control. Welcome to the show, Rob.
No, thank you so much. I am a husband of a controlling wife, very happily married, but in a very Freudian way, realized I come from a controlling mother who made suggestions that she expected to be followed.
In other words, not suggestions.
Oh, yes. She would make the suggestion and sit and wait for you to complete the task that she had in hand.
But it sounds like you're not minding that much, right?
I've got a laid-back, I guess, type B personality that I just kind of take it and go with it and go with the flow, and I don't like to stir the water. But, I'm the sole breadwinner of the house. My wife stays at home with my two daughters. I work two jobs, but she was a former accountant, and so she handles all the money. I also call her the taskmaster because she also has lists of things that she suggests that need to get done, to the point where I'm at my in-laws, they always tell her to give me a break and let me sit down for 2 seconds. And but that's just kind of the world I grew up in.
Yeah, you just have to see if the things, if the things that are happening are okay with you, because they might be okay with you. I mean, if somebody's raising kids, if you guys are raising kids, my belief is that there is too much work, period. So there's a constant sense of having to do work. But I think you need to decide, like, are you really okay with some stuff, or do you want to broach it with your wife and say, look, hey, this, we got to change the way this goes. I want to do it differently. I'm feeling oppressed in this area. Can we handle this differently?
We've discussed about the tasks, and, I said that they're a little excessive, and she said, well, if I don't give you a list of everything to do, they just don't get done. And my answer is always, they don't get done the way that you want them to. Things will get done, things will get handled, the kids will be fine. It's just, you have, in your mind, you would do it XYZ, and I do it ABC.
Yeah, well,
this brings us back, Rob, to what Nancy was talking about earlier. Nancy, when you said with adolescents or kids in the house with chores, which is really what we're talking about, you get a list of things, and that child figures out, what's the best way for me to accomplish these tasks, right, on my, some sense of control. So maybe I said to you, that's not such a bad idea for grown-ups too.
I think one of the things that can happen is you can have somebody who needs very much to feel successful. And if I'm right, namely that there's too much work to be done, then there's constant frustration because your wife may not be able to feel successful. So I would actually directly talk with her and say, listen, I feel like you're upset about these tasks, and let's talk about our goals. I want you to not feel frustrated taking care of the kids. How can we really be together around all this stuff and not be, talking about how the diapers get put on? I use it. It's not really a joke because I insisted that the diapers get put on exactly the correct way when I had kids. And I'm ashamed of it to this day that I was so obnoxious.
Rob, thank you so much. I'm glad you called. Erica, Faith Middleton with Dr. Nancy Horn on Control.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
So what advice would you give to a person who's in a situation where, I'm a young adult and I'm getting started on my own? I'm about to get an apartment. This is my second one. And it's like your mom puts obligations on you that she's asking a lot and that she knows it, but it's something that you can't really get past because it's your mom. So you kind of have to do it, but it's almost too much,
I would really chat with her, honestly. I would really chat with her and maybe say, listen, I'm trying to be more independent. I'm trying to be more grown, and I want to love you and also take care of you in some way, but I don't want to feel bossed around in the same way that I might have been when I was 8. So can I give you some feedback about it? Can we work this out? I sympathize with it completely. My mother told me if I was in a kid someplace, she'd say, give me some Kleenex. Give me the Kleenex. And I got totally burned because she didn't say please. So it was
right.
That same issue.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Okay, we were out of time, unfortunately, Erica. I hope that helped. Nancy, great suggestion. Thank you, Erica, for calling in.
Yeah,
good luck with your Good luck with the new apartment. I hope you get it. Dr. Nancy Horn in New Haven, wonderful as always.
Thank you, Faith. This show is
about the richness of life. Find the books, people, recipes, wine, and cocktails we feature online anytime at WNPR.org. Click on Programs in New Haven. I'm Faith Middleton.